Hello and welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. My name's Chris Fletcher and I'm your host. Tech on Toast exists to connect hospitality to technology. Search for your best problem-solving tech on our marketplace, listen to both operators and tech experts on our podcast, or just meet up with the brilliant people who are helping innovate the hospitality industry as we enter a new era. Welcome to Tech on Toast. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought today by Point One. Point One offers the complete EPOS system for your hospitality business. From mobile order and pay and self-serve kiosks to restaurant and kitchen management, Point One has the solution. Head over to their website today to find out more and get in touch with their experienced team. Enjoy the show.
Right, welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. And this week we're delighted to be joined by, I'm going to get this right now, we've been discussing this off air, Chief Growth Officer, Richard Hartley from S4 Labour. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. Full marks, you got it right.
Yeah, it took a bit of prepping and I had to pre-warn everyone, but I'm all good. And how are you today? We're on a tube strike day in London, but they're not happening.
No, they're not happening, so it's easy to get around. Despite that, I came in on my bike. So
I saw the helmet. I thought you're either a nervous tube passenger or you've got a bike.
I have a bike. I'm equally a nervous tube passenger, but not today. No, making the most of a bit of sunshine that's kind of in what has been a very wet, well, feels like a wet July in the last couple of days.
Yeah, wet summer. Right.
Oh, no, I was talking to an operator yesterday who was saying it was properly hindered over the weekend.
It's really weird, isn't it? I think the weather, how much it impact. I mean, I used to work at Colucho's for like 10 years and we had lots of big terraces.
Yeah.
And the summer was like, you'd budget for it thinking, you'd always be, you know, optimistic. But then you get there and go, oh, God, okay, it rained again.
Yeah.
It doesn't help.
Strikes, you know, we could do without those.
Anyway, less woe is me. So tell us a little bit about you and S4 before we get into anything. So, I mean, have you got a pitch you can give us about S4 Labour?
I've got loads of pitches. We're going to talk a little bit about what we do today. But I guess if we go back to where we started, because I think it still drives our key purpose. I joined about 8 years ago. I'd known the founders, Phil and Alistair, from my time at M&B. So kind of all of us were operators before we joined the tech world. Alistair was a really great guy. I joined M&B as his graduate mentee. He was my mentor 16, 17 years ago. And we spent a lot of time at M&B having a lot of fun. We went off and did separate things. He set up S4. And also a pub company alongside, because not everybody knows this, but we've got a small pub company.
Yes, yes.
Just two pubs now, but kind of food-led pubs we're very, very proud of. And we use those as incubators for our ideas and test beds for the technology. But Alistair was head of a number of different things when he was at M&B. I guess most notably and poignantly for this conversation, he was in charge of labour productivity.
Right.
You know, kind of tasked with sort of what was about an estate of 2,000 managed pubs at the time.
Wow.
And kind of going, how do we help people be more productive in their jobs? He also did a bit of operational stuff. When I was working with him, we were working on All Bar One, and we had a bit of fun doing that. But he left and set up S4 with a view to helping out the smaller guys.
Yeah.
It was great if you worked in M&B, you had big all bells and whistles systems that could do stuff, but there was nobody doing anything for the smaller operators, and that's where we thought we could play our part. Actually, as it turned out, kind of the small single sites were sort of still struggling to get their heads around technology, and I guess in the last few years we've all seen a big change in the adoption of technology, and interestingly enough we've launched a product recently for the smaller sites, and that's been really effective. But when we were trying to do that 10-11 years ago, people weren't as interested, and it was more the multiples that were, it was the smaller multiples, what we considered like the progressive operators, who knew there was a better way of doing things, didn't have access to the M&B style systems, but wanted something more than a spreadsheet that told them what they were paying.
Yeah,
and that was kind of where we started. Well, how do we help those people? And it's been a journey ever since.
Yeah, it's weird. I won't tell you who. I might tell you afterwards. But I met a supplier, an operator, who've got plus 50 sites. I was in a kitchen with their founder, and I was walking around, and I saw a spreadsheet on the wall. I went, "Tell me that is not a rota." And he went, "That's a rota."
Yeah.
I said, how have you got this big with that? And he went, "Oh, just not a priority." And I was like, and they're a great brand. I mean, I'll tell you afterwards, but they're a great brand, really cool, do great work, and are very, very people-centric internally and externally. I was shocked. So, I mean, you guys are you still seeing
less and less
Excel?
You know, listen, when I started, Excel was
they're rare. I know that, right?
My biggest competitor. But no, I was talking to an operator. This was pre kind of 2020, but who was still paying their team in cash. and you kind of get, but it was, you know, don't need to go to the bank if I pay the team in cash. We just take it out the tills and figure out what people are owed and pay that. But you kind of get, well, and you know, good size operator, and excess of 20 sites again, and you go, and that can't have still been happening. But it does, and it surprises us and delights us because it's these idiosyncrasies that kind of make hospitality what it is.
I was literally just having that conversation with someone today about the fact that his background is retail generally, and he's now in hospitality, and I was saying to him the differences actually between the two. I always feel like retail have a bit of a plan. Does that sound right? From a customer's point of view, right? Always feels like they're, you know, looking further down the road in terms of forecasting, whatever it might be. And then we're a bit more knee-jerky or a bit more, we react a bit quicker to whatever's facing us.
And you have to, in a way, and you still have to. I mean, things like the weather forecast are so much better now than they were sort of 10 years ago. And so you can plan a little bit better out. I probably know what the weather's going to be like. Next Thursday is my father's 70th birthday, and we're going to take him out for a bit. Well, it's a birthday, I don't really get congratulations.
I don't know, 70. If I get 70, I'll be happy.
fair play. And we're going to a nice little restaurant, and they've got an outside terrace, and we're looking at it, and we're going, yeah, it's probably pretty likely that we're going to be able to have a drink on the terrace when we get there.
Are you
there.
Sitting there with your algorithm going, I'm thinking 40% likely we might not have a waiter out there.
Well, something along those lines. But I guess, you know, if I cast my mind back to when I was running pubs here in central London, I used to look at the forecast still. And it would be a little bit reactionary because you'd be kind of going, what's next week looking like? Actually, the difference between a 20-degree day and a 30-degree, I mean, when we get the 30-degree days, is phenomenal if you've got a big outside space and the like. So with retail, it's always a little bit more consistent. Things like, bank holidays make the big differences. And I guess in hospitality, we react to the weather, we react to changes like tube strikes and goodness knows whatever else.
Yeah.
But the more you can plan, the further ahead you can plan, the better it is.
No, I totally agree. And the labour market, especially right now, is challenging, right? I think, and that is everywhere, not just in hospitality. And I suppose, how do you, because you guys, I suppose, in the core of your product is people, because
indeed,
you're scheduling people and you're forecasting people, I suppose, in the nicest sense of the word. But you know, how are you guys support? What kind of queries or what kind of challenges are you having during this time that's different to what was before?
I think the labour market is really challenging. I ran some numbers for a customer recently, and we've seen kind of in the last 12 months, we've seen hourly wage rates go up by about 8.8%, salaries go up by 5.4%. So, you know, against a backdrop of some pretty heavy inflation.
It's in line with inflation, I suppose. 8%,
More recent inflation, but beyond that. So there's definite cost pressures there. And there's been we've seen a slight relaxation in the labour market, i.e. there were slightly more people available than there were 12 months ago, but only slightly.
Yeah.
There are still plenty of our clients that are really struggling. We've been speaking to a couple now that have taken on international sponsorship. So looking at how they can get employees from further afield.
Particularly the chef market, right?
Exactly, the chef market. Yeah. And that's the key area that kind of, I think, hospitality has struggled. And, you know, lots of people got different jobs throughout pandemic and the like. I think there's generally been just less people around than there were.
I'm one of them, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, I'm an example of that. You know, I've left operations to do this mad stuff. So
exactly. That. And people did because they had a whole period of time without work.
Yeah,
and you sort of you know kind of that Australian, New Zealand, Antipodean kind of market that used to come over and do a couple of years. That's a bit harder now. And the people are starting to coming back. One of our customers operates hostels, and actually they're seeing a much greater use of their venues from people from further afield. And there are more people coming back into London. They are still seeing hospitality as a great place to work, but it's slow.
And I imagine you get really cool data, if data can be cool. But imagine you guys get to see, I suppose, a picture of the industry from looking at how people use your product.
Exactly that. So we have to say data's cool these days.
Otherwise, no one will come on the podcast. Yeah, I get it, right? Yeah. Data's really cool.
But there it is. So from the number of people that are being employed through to where they're coming from, we've got all of that data, and it's really interesting insight to see sort of, you know, where that's shifting from a UK-based workforce to from a foreign-based workforce, what they're getting paid. So there's plenty of insight there. Kind of, we just did some consultancy recently for an organisation that wanted to know kind of where their pay rates benchmarked against the industry.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's just really interesting to kind of go, well, actually, if you're a premium operator, are you paying premium wage rates? Do you need to?
Yeah.
And kind of as pressures get higher and harder, and they are, and we're all well aware of that, looking at those little things that could make a difference to the operation of the business.
Yeah, I think it's those nuances, isn't it, that can support you above everyone else. And productivity became actually a big part of Carluccio's for the next 6 or 7 years, and it was a painful conversation, right? Because we had deli business, bar business, cafe business, outside terrace, and we had to sort it all out because it was a bit of a, you know, it was a lot of labour. How productivity now in 2023? How is it being addressed?
Yeah, it has, and it's fascinating because we were talking earlier about, you know, spreadsheets on the wall and things like that. The greatest difference you can make with productivity is really effective shift planning.
Right.
I mean, we'll come on to touch on a deployment, I think, in a bit, but ultimately, you need a really good plan, and you need to fill the quiet times.
Yeah,
and we talk about slack tasks in our business. What do you do
In
those? Yeah,
no, I remember the name now.
I remember. It was stress when you've got enough slack, when you've got too many. But the reality of scheduling, and especially scheduling now, is that there are times when you will have staff in your business where they will not be busy.
Yeah.
And you'll need that. You know, we're sat here in Waterloo in Brewdog, great venue, and they're staffing up now for their lunchtime shift.
Yeah.
But the reality is, the peak of lunch will be 2 hours, give or take a bit, probably a bit longer here because they've got so many other fun things to do. Bowling, we're standing watching the
huge. It's like a small country.
So many. Yeah. But the, you know, we're habitual creatures, so the lunchtime peak will be 12 till 2, give or take a little bit. But nobody's coming and working a 12 till 2 shift. Actually, no one's even working 11 till 3 or anything like that, because 4 hours just isn't long enough, and especially in central London, where chances are people have had to travel a little bit in to get here. So you've got to look at how you fill their time and be really effective in that, and that comes from an effective plan. We've had a shift planning app available for 5 years now, and just looking at not only what they're doing and the actual planning of it, but communicating it really effectively to them. So
the
guys on the bar know that when it's quiet, to polish some glasses, to
fill. All right, so duties will kick in as depending on where you are in the shift.
The biggest difference in productivity planning is making sure people are busy when they're not serving customers.
Yes.
Everybody's primary role typically, and certainly front of house primary roles, is serving those customers. So making sure that they've got something to do when they're not doing that is super effective in terms of improving productivity. But it's equally the same in the back of house, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, one of the big projects we looked at in our pubs was moving food prep to the afternoon. Because actually, we really, you know, chefs are habitual creatures. They love to get in at 8 o'clock and get fully prepped up for a service at 12, and then they've got nothing to do in the afternoon ahead because they've already done the evening prep for the evening service.
And overprepped.
And quite often overprepped.
Well, it's a thing.
Well, yeah, because what you don't do, typically what we don't see is people prepping for the amount of covers they're going to do. They prep for the amount of, you know, they'll prep a whole sack of potatoes because it's a job.
It's actually a really interesting point, because if you've ever worked in a kitchen or worked around a kitchen, anyone who's listening, that you... Deliveries come in the morning, right, generally. And deliveries will come in. Your fridge is pretty bare because you've done whatever the day before. So the tendency to over-prep is straight in front of you. It's sitting on a crate. You don't want to put it in your fridge, so you can just prep it straight away. I've seen over-prep cost thousands.
Well, in wastage. Yeah. Not only in lost time by the chef spending too much time in doing it, but in
both. Yeah, both through prepping too much and then putting it in the bin.
So we found by moving our prep to the afternoon, it was brilliant from a labour perspective and also slightly more effective from a wastage perspective.
Yeah, because you've got energy in the kitchen working already.
Yeah, and coming to that energy, what's really interesting is actually staff like to be busy.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about motivation and retention, and hopefully we'll touch on it a bit more, but a busy team is a happy team.
Yeah.
So kind of actually just stood on the bar looking at an empty restaurant isn't much fun. People want to know that they've got a task, want to know that they're working towards the overall objectives of the business, whether that be serving the customers or doing something else that gets them ready to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, I love it. And how are you manifesting that, I suppose, then? So you've got your productivity. Is it an add-on to your main product? Is it something that you've...
We tried... One of the dangers, we were founded in 2011, and, you know, 12 years later, we've gone and gone and gone, and, you know, we've got a development team that continues to add to our product. But what we don't want to do is... create something that's too complex for the little guy. I spoke to you earlier about, you know, when we first started, we thought we'd help the little guy. And the danger is you build and build and build a product, and suddenly it's this big behemoth, and kind of people look at it and go, well, that's just too complicated for me. I don't need that. I don't need a really big shift planning tool if potentially I work in a small cafe with 2 to 3 members of staff. I don't need expensive deployments, well, not expensive, but perceptively expensive solutions when I'm a smaller organization. So we, what we wanted to do was find a way that we can right-size our offering for whoever we're talking to. So if you've got 100 sites and they're big sites, then we can talk about productivity through shift planning. We can talk about deployment through effective, looking at not just kind of how much you're spending, but how effectively you're spending it and the like. But more importantly, we can right-size that if you're smaller.
And what feedback do you get? So you've got, obviously, people are using your tech. They're going through tough times, as we mentioned before, labor availability. And are you getting much feedback around that in terms of
It's interesting.
The results?
Yeah, well, not only the results, but clearly times are tough at the moment.
Yeah.
And kind of we're all well aware of that. And actually that brings tech like ours right into the forefront of people's priorities.
Yeah.
You know, actually labor is still typically the biggest variable cost for
any
business.
Will always be.
Yeah, will always be, and therefore get scrutiny.
Yeah.
And kind of what you want to do is spend the right amount.
Yeah.
You know, you want to know that your wage rates are the right rate for the people that you need, and you want to know that what you're spending in any given week is going to deliver the service that's going to walk through the door.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, where we try to support people. But you can understand that at times like now, when people are under huge amounts of pressure, it gets much more focus.
Yeah.
And understandably so. And therefore, we get a lot of engagement from customers that sort of say, you know, actually, could we be doing using the system a bit better? You've enhanced it. We've possibly been focusing on other things. How do we re-engage? And it's important that we can be there for our customers in those times.
And on that, what features, I suppose, could, if a customer, if I'm using S4, because, you know, obviously we're coming across, when I used to use labor management or workforce management tools in my operations career, you tend to focus on the end product, the cost. You know, you tend to focus on the output. You don't really look at, you've just talked really well, actually, about the fact, all the bits in between that actually you have good knowledge of and you've built the product. What features are there to really help me in that case?
So I think the biggest value that we can add in that space is deployment.
Yeah.
And what I mean by deployment is not just looking at what you spend, but how effectively you spend it.
Yeah.
And kind of what we do in that is we have a really simple deployment graph that talks about the stress and slack that I mentioned over. We plot for every hour of the day. We integrate with EPOS. I think at last count, we integrate with the 298 separate EPOS organizations.
A lot. Like,
yeah, I know.
Did you count them before you came in?
Yeah, no. Funnily enough, it came up in conversation with our CTO yesterday. So the numbers.
I bet it did. 298 is a lot.
Yeah, it's fresh in my head. Well, it's interesting because we're trying to integrate with another new one because they are continuing to come and they want to do it differently. And we've got 298 that do it the same way.
You can do it that way, mate.
Anyway.
Tech on Toast is pleased to announce that HRC, Hotel, Restaurant and Catering, is returning to London on the 25th to the 27th of March 2024 at the XL. Discover game-changing trends, network with industry leaders, and explore cutting-edge solutions that will elevate your business. Mark your calendars for an unforgettable experience at HRC, as this is where the future of hospitality unfolds. Don't miss out. To find out more, check out the website www.hrc.co.uk. Back to the chatting.
Anyway,
but it's interesting, isn't it? Because DeliverActor, probably the only other company I know who have that many APIs built, right? It's insane. Yeah. But legacy helps, right? The fact that you've been around for a while.
It helps be around for a while. So the chances are, if you've got an EPOS, we probably work with them.
Yeah.
But what we do is, but we take that sales information, we run that through our algorithms, and we tell you how many people we think you're going to need at any point in the day. And then we look back at yesterday and kind of go, when were you quiet? When were you busy? And we give people better information to make better decisions. Like, we're not perfect because, you know, their sales forecasting isn't perfect. Our algorithms aren't perfect, but they're really good.
But somewhere in the middle, right, of all of that, I spoke to Christian from Tenzo about this, that's saying the same thing, that somewhere in the middle of, because there's smart people building tech and making great algorithms that will get as close as they can. Smart people running restaurants and bars, putting in their ideas and their gut feeling from what they do. So somewhere in the middle, we must be 10%, 50%, you know, within what we think we're going to do in terms of sales and forecasting?
Remarkably accurate.
Really?
In truth, yeah, it is. I'm subject to loads of different factors.
Yes, of course.
And the size of the business, but it is remarkably accurate. And what's fascinating about it is we stand in our own pubs and do this, and we kind of go, you're still in the middle of the pub, and you go, it feels a bit busier than we were expecting. It
feels like a $2,000.
and then we look back at the system the next day and go, sure enough, we had 5 people on, we should have had 6. And that was that kind of, that's when the team felt a bit stretched, a bit stressed, and we didn't quite deliver the service that we might have liked to. It's one of our buzzwords, actually. We really don't like it. It's the word cope. I remember this from my operations days. How was
I coped a lot in my operations days.
Yeah, but you do. You kind of you go in and you look at Saturday sales and you call the manager on Sunday morning. You go, oh, you forecast $2,000 and you took $3,000. How was it? And they go, well, we coped.
The
initial reaction is great. We've done $1,000 more, and clearly to do more than was planned is never bad news. We're never going to be ungrateful for additional revenue. But the fact that you didn't plan for it and the fact that you coped means, you know, what are we expecting out of that? Well, we're expecting your customers didn't probably have the best of experiences.
Yeah, we cut some corners somewhere.
Your staff probably didn't have the best of times either. And in the kind of, when we're in that kind of situation where employment staff, as we've touched on, you need your staff to be enjoying themselves. You don't need them to be looking over their shoulder.
And what I find really interesting about that, because again, being a user of said tech, that how much trust do you ask for from your customer in terms of trusting what the system's telling you? Because I always think that's a barrier for operators. They kind of get to the point, they're like, oh yeah, but I think this. But actually, someone really smart's worked out that this is going to happen.
Yeah, we're really open about it when we do our training and implementation. You know, we're not perfect. We're trying to give you better information. We encourage our customers to do what I've just described. Stand in the middle of your pub, tell me whether you feel that it's right, have a look at S4 the next day, and tell me whether you think how far off you think we were. And they go, okay, that's remarkably accurate.
That's why I think I agree. And I was one of those people that had to be convinced, I think, back in the day. But actually, when I did believe, and just kind of, because if you're paying for, I always say to people, if you're paying for kit, if you're going to buy software, return on investment's key, and you've got to make sure actually you're letting it do its job before you start critiquing it or before you start blaming it or anything else. So it's interesting.
We're there to support a really complex operation.
Yeah.
You know, there are loads of differing factors that make staffing a restaurant really, really difficult. And we're there to do our bit to make it that little bit easier and give you some better information to make better decisions. And we do that continually. It's why we've got sort of 96% retention rate, because people look at that and go, it works. it does work. But we're not perfect, and you know, it's so easy. I spent a bit of time in casual dining, and they
say that like you had it was painful.
it wasn't. Well, I had a great time. Really enjoyed it. But you know, cost pressures, and possibly feeling it harder than anyone else at the moment. And so the scrutiny over every pound that's spent has never been higher. And I've never been in a business that's really scrutinized the kind of what's spent more so than in casual dining. But the conversations you therefore have kind of with your managers going, could you cut, you know, an hour here or an hour there? And you go, oh, crikey. I didn't have a deployment solution when I was in it. And if you just have better information to make better decisions, it takes away some of the challenge.
Yeah, data is key, right? And I think
that comes back to it.
And I think being informed is the one thing a manager can't be without tech. I mean, I genuinely, you know what you know. You know what's happened the last 3 weeks. If you're a new manager, you're doomed. If you're a new site, you're even more trouble, right? Because you've got no prior years. So it's all this information you need.
You know, and we talk about multi-site. You know, if you're an area manager or you're a small operator, you know, a multi-site operator with 5, 6, 7 sites, you can't be everywhere at once. You are reliant on having somebody good on the ground who's telling you what's going on. But also, you know, with data like ours, you can properly visualize what it was like.
Yeah.
And we do that continually. We support our customers in being able to do that and sort of coach them through kind of how do you look at last week and go, what was good and what wasn't? You know, where do your managers need some support?
Yeah. And I think, and it's funny, do they start using your language? Strack and slash.
Completely. No. Fascinatingly, actually, kind of even people that don't use our tech sometimes.
Because the minute you said it, I was like, ping. I remember that. Yeah. No. And had the yellow and red bars. Is that right?
Or yeah,
the
exactly.
Yeah, I remember.
You're there. Green is good.
I mean, I only looked at red, I'm afraid. it was a tough career.
Yeah. But I mean, I think kind of, and that's part of our responsibility as well as a tech provider, is making the end user face really intuitive and really simple.
Yeah.
It was kind of, you know, the most valuable bit of insight we give is our deployment graph. But the why it's so valuable is because it's so easy to interpret.
Yeah.
We sit there in demos when we're out and about selling, and you kind of go, you don't need to be a labor expert to understand this graph. And everyone just goes, oh, yeah. You're right. Before you even explained it, I got it.
Yeah.
I kind of almost realized what I was looking at.
Yeah.
And being able to do that, because we're not expecting hospitality professionals to be tech wizards. And we don't want them to be. We want them to be really good at what they're passionate about, about the food and the drink, about the service they're giving, about the environment they're creating. But we want to support that and play our part and make it really easy for them to do.
Yeah, and it is heavily linked, isn't it? Customer experience, staff retention.
Ah,
I think all those boxes are being ticked. Because I think sometimes people dismiss tech as a bit, you know, I think people see it as a cost, an added cost, right? An added extra. And I'm spending a lot of my time trying to convince people otherwise, right? Because everyone's using it now in some form. And I think that you've got to let it play out and got to let trust that actually you've got automation coming here, which is going to save you time. You've got forecasting that's going to save you time and give you more insight. But yeah, it's directly linked. Are you seeing that? I know you see that, but are your customers understanding that?
Yeah, in varied amounts. What's really interesting is, I touched on it a moment ago, people pay us a load more attention when times are a bit tougher.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, we do consultancy alongside our technology.
Right, okay.
Sometimes that just supports in people's delivery of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
It takes a fresh set of eyes to come into the business and challenge kind of ways that people get habitually sort of writing rotors.
Oh, so you'll go in and do consultant, probably over productivity, over whether you're getting the most out of your rotor?
No, quite. We like to link everything back to productivity and deployment and labor costs, because those are kind of really our special areas of specialism. But it's fascinating. We did a big piece of consultancy at the start of the year with one of the big four supermarkets looking at their cafes.
Wow.
And kind of, you know, what came out of that is what the most productive sites were the most motivated sites. So we've got a shift feedback capturing solution. So at the end of people's shifts, they can rate their shift and see how it was. And we can generally get a really good picture of how motivated and how engaged the staff are. And then we can tie that back to site performance. And the biggest correlation was with highly motivated teams and high levels of productivity.
It's absolutely connected. And saying that from having worked in those teams myself, you just, when people are engaged, they will do more and deliver more.
Yeah,
they do. And the customers are happier.
And they find their own ways to fill those quiet times, and they're really proactive about doing it, and they enjoy being there.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Well, actually, one of the other bits we've been doing a bit of a project on recently is tips. And, you know, a hot topic at the moment, right?
Yes.
New legislation coming out and the like. And if we sort of park that aspect of it for a moment and just kind of go, this is all about compliance tips. But the difference between daily, weekly and monthly allocations of tips is really interesting. And kind of, I'm sure everyone's got great tronk schemes that look at clever ways of doing it. But if the enhancement in output, if you allocate your tips on a daily basis as opposed to a weekly or monthly basis, is fascinating.
Really?
Suddenly you get staff that want to work the key shifts, obviously, because there's more available. And they're really happy to work that little bit harder to get that greater share. Now, we've known that forever. We haven't talked about it. Recently, we've been analysing it a little bit more. But, you know, Koki, if there are people out there listening to this, and hopefully there are some, look at whether...
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm wasting my time as well.
Look at how frequently you allocate it. I mean, we see some that allocate it monthly, and I kind of go, that's really not good enough. Weekly, bit better. But go daily. Go daily and look how you sort your the number of staff you'll find that are wanting to work your key shifts, which is typically sometimes a challenge, and look at how much more motivated they are to work harder on those shifts.
I was literally, James Brown was sitting in your chair last week, and we were talking about tip jar, and we talked about that incentivizing people just immediately, rather than dragging it out, sharing it with, you know, the clouds, and then we want to get into the murkiness of it all. But you know, that immediate gratification of saying thank you for what you did is huge.
And JB, obviously, with everything he does with Tip Jar, is a really good guy. And I'm pretty sure the guys can see on the day what they've earned.
Yeah,
so you said, yes, you got this real value there. Not only does it hit my pay at the end of the month, which can typically be at the end of the month, or depending on pay frequencies, etc. But they can see yesterday. You know, I can look at my app and go, oh, actually, yesterday was a good day, and come back to that point about doing the daily allocation. Clearly, it's supported much better if it's with reporting that tells them exactly what they earn on those individual days, just reinforcing the activities.
Well, it's just incentivizing these people that need incentivizing, right? A lot of people don't do it for, you know, it's probably not a career, like long-term career. It's probably a stopgap for a while, or they're dropping in, dropping out. But they need to make some money while they're here, and we want to support that. And what about, because I like to compare, you guys have been around a while.
We have.
Without being rude, and I'm not calling you dinosaurs here. But it's interesting to be in this space for, you've got a lot of new competitors who come along and probably trying to crawl up and catch you up. What are the big things you've learned about the industry over the past 15 years, did you say? Was it?
Well, I probably started in hospitality when I was far too young.
And I must say, actually, most people I've met from M&B who come through M&B, and I work with a few. Richard Fieldhouse, don't know
yeah,
if you know
I know Rich. Yeah,
so Richard's yeah. one of my area managers.
Interesting story, sorry, connections and the like. So when I joined as a graduate, he was running the Harvester in Monk's Path in Birmingham, and I was sent there to work in the kitchens over Christmas.
Yeah. I've worked with most people I've met from M&B, and I'd say all, actually, have been very impressive. I don't know what they did in terms of looking after you guys, training, coaching, whatever it was, but really impressive people have come out and done really incredible things in the industry and other fields. But yeah, I'd just like to point that out, because I actually think working with those kind of operators who've been in that field is really powerful, because they have great insight and they have great coaching, or whoever looked after you a lot, I don't know. But it pays off, right? Because Richard was another really good example of a very officious area manager who worked for me. He was very good.
Yeah, it's a great institution, M&B, and it's developed a number of our industry leaders.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, I guess when I was there, we had 2,000 managed sites. So you don't get to that sort of scale without knowing a thing or two.
Yeah, we had a digression there. Sorry, I was talking about the fact that you've got... But no, it's interesting. So your product, are you not tempted to go and build, you know, a POS or go and do something? POS is probably not the best example.
I think we're best to stick in our lane. We love everything to do with people. We've evolved our solution over the years, you know, whether that was sort of adding loads more HR functionality. We do a fully managed payroll bureau. We didn't have that when I started. We will continue to evolve in the people space. We toyed with ideas years and years ago in the very early start when you were kind of wondering about directions. Yeah. We did a bit of a kind of not a stock product, but a bit of a prep and par kind of product. And actually what we realized was we were much better sticking to our knitting. We see such a long future for us within the people space that actually we're much better focusing on that and adding that value where we can.
I agree. I just think it's always, you know, stick to what you're good at and do it well, right? As my mum used to say. But what about customers? Are they looking for that end-to-end solution with people, for instance? So you talked about HR, payroll bureau. Scheduling is not enough. Would they rather it was all in one place? Is that where you're... Is that what you're here, or is that
well, that's why we launched the payroll bureau.
Right. Because you were getting asked for it.
Yeah, we were getting asked for it. It kind of, you know, we're firm believers in integrating.
Yeah.
We're absolutely 100% behind that, because innovation comes to the marketplace and we can't do it all. And actually people come up with some really clever solutions, and it's our responsibility to, if we don't do that, to integrate with them really effectively and, you know, to kind of take advanced pay solutions, we integrate with those. If we look at applicant tracking solutions, we integrate with some best-in-breed applicant tracking solutions, and those guys just do that. They just do advanced pay, or actually advanced pay is probably doing them a bit of a shortage, but they would say they do loads more, you get the point. I mean, our job is kind of, when innovators come to the marketplace like that, they do things that we aren't currently doing, is to make sure that we've got a really good integration with them, that they can have as good a solution from us from the two combined entities as if it was one entity. To come back to the end-to-end piece, our start point is kind of when they get offered a job, and we can do everything from issuing contracts and all the HR bits around that through the onboarding process right up to kind of the pensions at the end of payroll. We think we'll probably stick to that kind of spectrum for now, and because we think there's such a big future to do in the middle of that.
Yeah, it's not like there's not a lot to do in that space.
When I joined, it was all about productivity and cost and the deployment aspect, and how that's moved now into kind of motivation, engagement, retention.
Yep.
You know, and kind of, you know, we're all victims of the circumstance we're in. I think we all got very good at cost management when it came to labour, or at least being very critical of what was being spent. And actually, as as time moves on and labour shortages arise, making sure your teams are motivated and they want to stay is really important. And actually, how does tech play its part in that?
No, it's huge, and I think everyone's got responsibility in that as well. And what about you guys for the future? I mean, you've been around. So
yeah.
Was I right? Was I saying 15 years? Was that correct? That
you've been... No, not quite. 2011.
2011.
So 12 years.
I aged you more. I do that to everybody. Sorry.
<That's all right.
laughs> But what does the future look like? What have you guys got planned coming up?
So we think sales growth and engagement is our big future in the people space.
Right.
We've got some neat stuff coming in the autumn that will look at employee motivation, how we capture that, and how we feed that back. And then some really, we think, kind of innovative ways that we can support employees to be more motivated. So it's fascinating. We launched a shift swapping module probably 2019, and we thought it was going to be great because it's going to save the managers loads of time.
Yeah.
Because they could, staff could say, "Oh, actually, I don't want to work Friday night. It's my girlfriend's birthday. I forgot to say. How can I?" You know, and the manager could just all through an app, so it's super easy. Actually, what it turned out to be was a really powerful engagement tool for the employees, because they suddenly felt much more in control of their own destiny. They didn't felt done to waiting for the manager to write the rota and push it out there. We think there's loads more to do in that space. You know, as people kind of, as a younger generation doesn't want to work the 60 hours that kind of perhaps my generation did, and, you know, did or were told to.
We just did it, yeah. We didn't know any different.
No, quite. Actually, what we're seeing is people coming along going, actually, I'm really comfortable working a 20-hour week.
Yeah.
But people need to know that. So how do you communicate really effectively, actually, I want 20 hours this week, but next week I could do with a few more? How do we make all
and
that
you know what?
So much easier?
For you guys, there's a great podcast called Spilling the Tea, Peter Pilgrim's on it with Gen Z employees talking about, and I listened to it on the way down the train this morning, and it was exactly that. She was saying, he said to her, this is live on a podcast, how do you feel about working 40 hours a week? Because I don't really love that. I want to be in control of it. I want to work less. And it was just a real insight, and it's just brilliant the way he managed that on air. But it's really interesting. They just speak about the very new approach to hospitality, which is coming, which is already here. But I think we're playing catch up a bit, aren't we? And the operators are.
I think so, yeah.
Obviously, because it's my generation running these businesses. and they grew up in a world that was, when you said, like 60 hours was okay.
No, it was. And kind of get that mindset of you need a bigger team that want to work less hours is new news in a way. And kind of being sensitive to that as well. And kind of understanding how you capture that information and use it on a continual basis so that you are looking after those employees and what they want.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I could talk to you guys for ages, actually. You've got some great... I think you've got some brilliant insight. I mean, can you get insight from your website? I'm just going to give you a bit of a lead for people dialing in. But, like, have you got data and insight on your website?
Have you got stuff you can share? We'll continue to put more and more out. We've done monthly trackers for a number of years now, so they're all on the website. If you follow our socials, they're on those as well. As we gain more insight, we're going to push a bit more through those channels. And, you know, I mentioned at the start of the podcast about those kind of average wage rate increases. We'll be talking about that. We do a bit of a sales tracker as well for people that are interested, because we get, you know, out of those 298 solutions, we get a reasonable amount of sales data. So if you're wanting to know how you're tracking against kind of the market, we're pretty early.
Do you share that externally or any share?
We do. So we'll put that out through. It's on the website. It's out for our socials.
That's awesome.
We normally get that out sort of day 2-3 of the month. So it's there pretty sharpish if people want to have a look and see how they're comparing to their peer group.
And what is the website, so I get it right?
Oh yeah. s4labour.co.uk.
s4labour.co.uk. Yeah, and can people reach out to you on LinkedIn? Are you allowed to, can
yes,
they stalk
please,
you?
Yes, yeah. Yes, stalk please. Me, stalk the organisation. We're welcome to new conversations. We love what we do. We're passionate about supporting hospitality and always have been. So if anybody kind of likes the sound of what they've heard and would like to find out a bit more, then get in touch.
For sure. And you guys are on the marketplace as well. You can find them on there. And actually, we've got a new newsletter starting, which has been in my to-do list forever. But I finally employed someone and told them to do it instead, which is great. And it's called The Spread, and that's out every fortnight. And actually, I promised Hannah, who works with S4, that I would include some of your data in there. So I will sort that out today.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks very much. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.